Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
First of all, happy Friday. Thank you for spending your morning with us. The U.S. against Europe Ryder Cup match from Paris is currently underway. The U.S. has notched one win. They are up in one more match. And if you're curious how this is going on, they're playing two versus two, pairs challenge here. And the U.S. is up, has won one match. Ricky Fowler and Dustin Johnson have already won their match this morning live from Paris. We have two tie matches, or all square, as it's typically called here, and then one, I believe, in the latest with the U.S. up one stroke or one hole. So as we are moving along, good start for the U.S. so far. Justin Rose in the tee box at 18, and we will see what happens on the 18th hole here with one all square match and Europe trying to get one back here. So Justin Rose just hit his tee shot and turned around and told the gallery to be quiet, which is surprising considering this is being played in Paris. I don't know if he was getting taunted by some people with the U.S. or not. Again, U.S. leads with one match, two matches all square, and the U.S. has already won one. This is, I think, a really fun event to watch, but obviously for many of you waking up across the country, you're going to be like, oh, crap, I didn't know that was already underway. So we'll keep you updated as we move through the Ryder Cup. Last night's big action. The Rams come out and dominate against the Vikings. Rams now 4-0. Vikings have fallen to 1-2-1. How much nervousness should be involved there? We also have the Major League Baseball playoff race coming down to the wire. We were just trying to put that into context for you guys. And we have a lot of college football and NFL coming up this weekend. To give you a roadmap, by the way, Danny G, you can step in and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe we have set a new all-time high in the podcast download. So you can always download the podcast if you miss any of our show. Search out the term Outkick. Go download it. Millions of you are doing it. Thanks to you guys. Are we correct, Danny G?
Yes.
Have we set a new record?
Brand new record, an all-time high for Outkick the Coverage podcast downloads.
I appreciate all that. Obviously, it is the final day of the month of September, so hopefully we'll get a lot more of you downloading those throughout the weekend. I also want to tell you, and I retweeted this, but we haven't spent that much time pumping it. We have got an Animal Thunderdome exclusive. So if you're going to be on the road driving somewhere this weekend, or you just got 30 or 40 minutes, you're out cutting the lawn, you've got some chores to do around the house, I would encourage you guys to go dive in there and download the Animal Thunderdome exclusive. It's like 35 or 40 minutes that Danny G put together and did a great job of all of the best Animal Thunderdome. What, over the last like month? What exactly is on that that podcast?
It's over the last 3.5 months.
Oh, wow. So the best that you thought we'd done of the Animal Thunderdome for like the last 3.5 months.
Yep.
Just Animal Thunderdome. So we got a lot of Animal Thunderdome fans. The number of people who tweet me and say, hey, my kids are in the car, I'm on the way to work, they absolutely love the Animal Thunderdome. If you want to entertain your kids, if they're fans, you can go download that podcast, 35 or 40 minutes of just that, which should be pretty good. But I want to thank you guys for setting new podcast record, downloading it more than has ever happened before. I also want to thank all of you for the tremendous support for my book. This is amazing. My editor told me yesterday, we have now sold enough copies to be on the New York Times bestseller list. Here is the question. Do you think the New York Times bestseller list will put me on the list or not? Or do you think they're not going to like the topic of my book and they're going to bump me off?
I think you will finally make that list, and then you'll be giving away money on the morning show. You promised that, and I marked the tape, remember?
How much did I promise to give away?
You didn't say the amount. But
no, that's good for me.
It's good for you. But you did say, if I get on the New York Times bestseller list, I swear I'll give money away to the listeners.
We'll just have like calls and I'll just give away cash.
Yeah.
Oh, like old school DJ.
Yeah. I mean,
no telling what our ratings will do. That's what they always try to do in like different radio markets. Hey, we're just going to give you away whatever dollar figure it is.
$10,000 on the tens.
It's not going to be that much, I'll tell you that right now. But
damn.
I'm curious of whether or not they'll actually put me on the list because we've sold enough copies. And the way the New York Times works is the bestseller list is not actually the best-selling books. It's a sort of
algorithm.
Crazy kind of algorithm that they put in place that oftentimes ends up benefiting books that they think are New York Times style books, right? Like, so some guy who writes a book about, I don't know, I don't even want to get into the possibilities, but I saw the list based on what the numbers of sold copies were that my editor sent me, and some of these books are not even hardly selling any copies at all. Tiger Woods, by the way, in the tee box right now, all square on 15. Tiger Woods typically not that great of a Ryder Cup player. Are you guys, I want to bring in the crew, are you guys Ryder Cup crew? Like, do you watch this? I've got it on right now. Obviously, I'm always excited when we're up this early in the morning and we've got legitimately live sports like to sit and talk about. So will you guys watch? Like, do you guys have a television on right now with the Ryder Cup on in the LA studio?
Yeah, three of our screens are showing Tiger Woods right now. And you know us, we've talked about this several times on the show. If Tiger Woods is playing, we're watching.
Yeah. So, by the way, Tony Finau coming in on 18 in an all-square match. So this is going to be interesting to see how it finishes. Beautiful weather in Paris. Looks like absolutely perfect conditions to play golf today.
By the way, our very own Dub is there in person right now.
How did he not tell us that he was going
to play? Right?
First of all,
are you serious?
How much money does our call screener make that he gets? Well, let's talk about this for a minute. Dub gets the job to answer calls. All right. He's like 24 years old. He lives in Nashville. He is our new call screener. And then he says, oh, I'm going to be out. Just so you know, he hops in the G chat and he's like, I'm going to be out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I did think it was a little bit strange because I'm like, you just got this new job and then you're leaving. This makes more sense that he got to go to the Ryder Cup. But how do you not tell your boss that you're going to the Ryder Cup? Because I would have tried to figure out how to get him on the phone live from the Ryder Cup to give us a report live from there.
That's what I'm talking about. I texted him yesterday when I found out, and I said, you're going to Paris? And his response was, yeah, I'm going to the Ryder Cup. My cousin got three tickets and offered one to me, and I just couldn't pass up the opportunity.
We got to cut this guy's paycheck if he's just hopping in a jet to go to Ryder Cup for the weekend in Paris. I mean, come on. So that is pretty cool that he's actually there. Do we have his phone number?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Let's try to call
him. You want me to try to get a hold of him?
Yeah. Right now, let's go on your phone, try to dial him and see if he left his phone on. We'll cover the international rate. I'm just curious if he will answer if LA calls him. Right. So Dub doesn't tell anybody or doesn't tell his boss, which is me, that he's going to actually be at the Ryder Cup, and we're watching it on television, and unless Danny G told me, nobody would have known. That seems like, Eddie, I mean, while Danny's trying to get him on the phone, doesn't that seem like something you should tell people if you work on a sports talk television show? Oh, by the way, I'm going to this major international sporting event overseas, which is going to be pretty phenomenal. Don't you think that's the kind of thing you should tell your boss?
Yeah, I don't know, Dub. I've never met the man, but that sounds to me like someone who didn't want to do any work at all, not even like a phone call. He just sounds like I don't want to do anything for the show, so I'm not going to tell anybody where I'm going. You have to tell us that you're going there. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like, my initial thought when he said that he was out Thursday, Friday, Monday was, why is this dude already taking vacation? Like, he's only been working for, like, 2 weeks, and he's like, he hops in the G-Chat, and he's like, I'm out for the next several days. And I don't, you know, get involved in anybody's life, but I was thinking to myself, man, if I were 24 and I just got a job with a new radio show, the last thing I want to do is immediately take 3 days of vacation and be gone. And I would easily want to explain to my boss, hey, by the way, didn't know this was going to come up, but we've had Ryder Cup tickets for 6 months or whatever it is. And then I'd be like, okay, yeah, that totally makes sense. But then to not even mention it to me, what's the update, Danny G? Is he answering his phone?
He is not. So far, all it's doing is giving me a busy signal.
So he might not have turned on international calling for his cell phone.
That's what it seems like.
Rookie mistake, by the way. Can you FaceTime him?
I'm going to try that next here.
Try to FaceTime him during the break. Here's the other question I have for you guys. This is obviously an exception because he's an international location. So if he has Wi-Fi, then it's easier to FaceTime him or FaceTime audio than it is to make like a normal call. I want to poll all three of you. Have you guys ever FaceTimed another man just to make a phone call to him? Danny G.
Never.
Have you ever thought of doing that?
No, and it's funny you bring this up while we're on the topic of our phone screener, Dub, because his first morning, my phone scared me because it was flashing, and I'm like, what the hell? And I pick my cell phone up, and I see this dude's face. Now, mind you, I've talked to Dub on the phone, but he's in Nashville.
Never seen him.
I've never seen him, so I don't know who this dude is with his big grill up on my screen on my phone. And then the next shot is him surveying the equipment in Nashville, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's Dub.
Well, that's also an exception. Like, I should say I have called men before when we've had, like, tech issues with either the television set up here in my house or the radio set up or something like that.
So engineer-wise,
I want to show, like, somebody who actually knows how technology works what I'm seeing so I don't screw it up and put, like, the wrong, you know, flip the wrong switch or whatever else. So that's an exception. But have you ever called another man otherwise on FaceTime other than for, like, some work-related event?
No way, never.
All right, Eddie Garcia, have you ever done it?
I've only done FaceTime like twice, and the only time I did it was my wife was like exasperated because I was at the grocery store and she didn't believe that they didn't have the salad dressing she wanted.
Oh,
so I like show her like the yes. shelf saying, "Look, it's not here."
I'm glad you mentioned that. I got sent to the grocery the other day by my wife to buy flipping dinosaur oatmeal for my boys. All right, the dinosaur oatmeal is like it's oatmeal, but it has like these little eggs that when you put them into the hot oatmeal, like they break open or whatever. And like anyway, my boys are obsessed with the dinosaur oatmeal. My wife tells me the local Kroger by us has the dinosaur oatmeal, sends me to go. I hate going to the grocery store for anything other than just to walk in and like get beer or walk in and get something that I'm going to eat that day, right? Like I hate going to buy anything. And so my wife sends me, and I swear to God, I get to the oatmeal aisle because I have no idea where the oatmeal aisle is, right? I stand in the oatmeal aisle for 15 minutes. I'm not kidding about you. Like, there were probably 40 people who passed me in the oatmeal aisle. I was just standing there, like, going expressly over every single different line of oatmeal. And then I'm like, no, it's not here, right? Because I knew that immediately when I came back home and I said, I got another kind of oatmeal, and I told my wife that it was not there, that she was going to, her first response was going to be, oh, it was there. 100 billion percent first thing she says is it was there. So I started taking photos. I took a bunch of different photos of the oatmeal aisle, like I was out like doing research against Kroger trying to figure out how to conquer the oatmeal business, just to have evidence for my wife that there wasn't oatmeal there. And then I expressly made her go to the grocery store, because every time I go to the grocery store and say something's not there, she doesn't believe me, and she usually just says it is there. So I made her go. It wasn't there. But that you did the same thing as me, because wives always believe that husbands are incompetent in the grocery store, and I'm so rattled now, she's so in my head, that I literally spent a quarter of an hour standing there trying to make sure that the dinosaur oatmeal wasn't on the shelves.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I do this all the time. You're right. She never believes me. And I'm like, I'm not an idiot. I can tell if this is here or not. And then, of course, she says, did you ask someone immediately? Did you ask someone who works there if they have it or not? And of course I didn't, because, you know, I'm looking at the shelf, it's not here. So
I was right on this one, because I sent her, I was like, you go get it then. If you go get it, I will give you $500 cash if you can find dinosaur oatmeal in this store right now. I'll just pull out my wallet, give you $500, do whatever you want to with it. So she went there, she couldn't find it. To her credit, she could have gone to another grocery store, bought it there, come back and been like, hey, I told you, you know, that it was there.
So what did
you,
win? Did you win anything with that?
No, of course not.
No, of course not.
I'm a married guy. I never win anything. I'm the least important person in my family. I got 3 kids and my wife. I don't matter. So you've never called somebody regularly. Like, and there's an exception. If you're a parent, if you called your wife, or certainly you've called your kids. Like, I call all the time on FaceTime when I'm out of town to say hi to my kids. But so I guess technically those are kids, not grown adults. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is not yesterday, but Wednesday, I'm sitting on my couch doing some work, and my phone buzzes, and it's Matt Leinart FaceTiming me. And so I immediately think, oh, this must be an accidental call. Like Cowherd is a couple of times. I think Gottlieb has too. Like you get accidentally butt dialed because you just talk to somebody, and it shows up as a FaceTime call. I think the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, I got a bunch of famous people relatively in the world of sports have accidentally FaceTimed me, right? I think it's an easy thing to do when your phone's in your pocket or whatever else. So I totally assume that Leinart is FaceTiming me accidentally. So I don't answer. And then like 2 minutes later, he calls me again, And I'm like, what is this dude doing? So I answer, and it's just him hanging out, sitting on the Fox lot. And he's like, hey, man, what's up? Just wanted to call. I was like, you intentionally are FaceTiming me? And his fiance says that he's just a huge dude FaceTimer. Like, he just calls people all the time and sits there and talks to him. And you're just, like, looking at some other dude, like, talking to him on the phone. I'm like, no straight man should be FaceTiming another straight man. So how old is Iowa Sam? You guys are around my age. You're with me. Iowa, so Dub, but Dub, you think Dub? We don't know. So let's try to FaceTime Dub over on the Ryder Cup and see what he does. What about you, Iowa Sam? Do you FaceTime other men?
I'm 31, and yeah, absolutely. I FaceTime.
For what reason?
Just because they're my friends or acquaintances.
But so, because like, you want to look at them? I don't understand. Like,
no,
I understand, like, texting another man, and
right,
I also
right.
understand calling another
yeah.
man, but there's never been a time where I've been like, hey, I want to look at this dude while I talk to him.
Well, okay. Well, I'm a little, I guess I am in the middle of the range of a millennial, so I'm FaceTime is something that, like, it's the Snapchat culture. It's like sending pictures of yourself to people. I don't use Snapchat, but I have FaceTime with friends before. I don't think it's any
so,
big,
but
big
like
deal
you FaceTime and you call a guy and you sit and you look at your phone and you're like, hey, dude, are we going to meet up later? Like, I don't understand the conversation while you're looking at another man.
Do you like
having
to meet up with friends face to face? I mean, it's just about seeing your friend and seeing their face and seeing that they're
why
alive.
Do you need to see another? You know he's alive if you text him and he texts you back.
Listen, I probably call more or probably text the most, then call, then FaceTime's like a distant third, but. Yeah, it's just about the technology you have, and I don't know. There's no stigma really attached to it for me.
Another thing,
I don't like having another man on my phone.
I don't like looking at myself, to be honest with you.
I also don't like. Why do I want to take a picture of myself? Like looking at like I think the whole thing is strange. So Leinart's in, and now I'm wondering, am I an old dude who's just like anti this? And there's all these kids out there every day, like. FaceTiming each other. Like, I understand if you're at an amazing event, right? Like, if you're in a bar and the U.S. just scored and you're like, hey, I want to show. But again, I would think you would just Instagram that or just post it on Snapchat so everybody can see it as opposed to one friend. I don't know. I just, when my phone, if the FaceTime thing comes on my phone and it's anything other than my wife, if I were a single guy, okay, I want girls like, FaceTiming me all the time. Like, I like to look physically at girls.
Hey, we got Dub on FaceTime right now.
Do we really?
Yeah.
All right, get it. Can we listen to him?
This is cool. He's showing me what he's looking at live at the Ryder Cup.
Is it possible to put him on?
Hey,
Danny G, what's up, bro?
Hey, Dub, you're live on the radio.
So, Dub, you're out in Paris at the Ryder Cup, and you don't tell me that you're going to the Ryder Cup?
Dub, Clay wants to know why you didn't tell him you were going to the Ryder Cup.
I told you guys.
Yeah.
Why would you not tell your boss that you were going to the Ryder Cup?
I told you like a week ago.
You didn't tell me? What hole are you on, Dub?
16 green, dude. Let's go. Tiger's about to kill it.
This is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, we'll go back to Dub. We're going to keep getting updates from Dub, who now is going to have to work on FaceTime from the course.
You're going to have to work a little bit now. You are our Ryder Cup correspondent.
Let's go.
Oh, nice.
Man. Oh, yeah.
That sound.
What just happened there?
What happened, Dub?
Probably can't hear you, Danny.
Yeah.
Are we just the awful Americans, by the way, with the guy on FaceTime now standing watching Tiger Woods on the green? Is Tiger going to stop and turn around and be like, hey, jerks, like I'm trying to putt
here? Be quiet.
Dub, what happened?
Danny G, let's see Tiger tee off on 16.
Oh, they're just cheering
for Tiger. All right, let's listen to Tiger tee off. Hold up your phone for everybody.
Nice.
All right, here's Tiger teeing off from the Ryder Cup.
I don't know
what happened. Did we lose Dub?
Yeah, it says poor connection and then it disconnected.
Man. Can you imagine? Would it be my fault if I got Dub to hold up the phone and then I just scream something right in the back swing of one of the European golfers?
Would that be awesome.
Dub's fault? Would I be in trouble for that? Or would that be something that I would everybody be like, oh, that's pretty funny, dude? I don't know. I feel like somehow I would get in trouble for
is
that.
Is he back?
He's back.
Is he back?
Yeah. Dub, let us know what's happening there.
Tiger is about to tee off on 16. It's a par 3. Got some water on the right. Downhill shot. I think he's going to nestle it nice and close.
by the way, U.S. is up 2-0. Tony Finau and Brooks Koepka won their match.
Nice.
What did the chicks look like in Paris last night,
Doug? The hard-hitting questions.
Should I scream? Hey, does Dub tell Dub to hold up his phone and turn it all the way up as loud as he can?
Okay, will do. Hang on.
Surely he's not going to actually do that.
Hey, Dub, tell the people around you not to swear.
Or if they do, to do it in French.
Clay says, hold up your phone. He wants to make some noise to interrupt Tiger's
Tell me when a Euro is about to tee off so I can yell.
We got live action on Tiger right now.
All right, I don't want to mess up Tiger swing. All right, so we'll listen to Tiger tee off here. I want you to tell me when a Euro is going to tee off because I'm going to yell and mess him up. This is truly the theater of the mind here, radio. Woods is on the tee. All right, Tiger's on the tee. We're on 16, all square match, Paris, France. Dub's on the tee. Tiger's on the tee. Sounds like a good shot.
Yeah. How was that, Dub? Was it a good shot?
It was a safe shot.
Safe shot.
All right. And what about the Euros? When are the Euros going to tee off? I'm watching right now. Oh, is this a delay or is this live right now? What I'm seeing on television live, Dub, is Molinari just put down his tee and he's talking with his caddy. There's probably like a 30-second delay, I would guess. Is Molinari about to tee off in front of you?
He's sitting behind the ball, lining up.
Yeah, all right. So we're here. So has the other Euro, have both the Euros already teed off? I'm kind of tempted to just...
This is
like being able to see the future because he's about 30 seconds
yeah,
ahead of me.
That's awesome.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joined now by Joel Klatt. He is going to be calling a game. I'm not even sure what game he is calling, but I bet he's got the Ryder Cup on his television. If I were betting a lot of money, that would be my play. You watching the Ryder Cup, Joel?
Sergio just teed off.
Yeah. How much do you like the Ryder Cup? By the way, for people who are just waking up out there, it's going on in Paris
so
right
well.
Now.
That actually is a little bit, I don't know how I feel about that. I'm sorry, what did you say?
Sergio, the U.S. is up 3-1. For those of you just waking up across the country, it's taking place in Paris, France. So obviously they are well underway there. The U.S. in the first four matches won 3, lost 1. So they're up 3-1. The foursome play is going on right now. That's where they alternate shots. And Phil Mickelson just narrowly avoided the water. Sergio just teed off. How much do you like the Ryder Cup?
I love it. I'm one of those guys that's a huge Ryder Cup fan. I think it's kind of a love-hate, I feel like. I feel like people either love it or they're totally indifferent about it. But for me, it's pretty awesome. I enjoy it quite thoroughly.
What game do you have tomorrow?
I've got Michigan at Northwestern, so looking forward to that one, in particular because this Michigan team is, I feel like, about to make a run and prove guys like you wrong. I just get the sense that they're playing really, really solid football. If you take a look at what they've done basically ever since the first quarter of Notre Dame, which is the first quarter of football in the entire season, they have been dominant. And we'll see how it goes, and we'll obviously see how they play later in the season, but they are a very good team.
What do you think is going to happen? I'm going up tomorrow, flying up in the morning to Happy Valley to watch the Penn State-Ohio State game, and obviously that is a massive game in the Big Ten East. How do you break down that game?
Well, so I think that the most underrated part of Penn State and their quarterback, Trace McSorley, is his ability to extend the play and convert on what I would call third and obvious situations. That I think that that's what gives most people and most teams the most issues. And when you don't have your best player who happens to be a pass rusher, that's a big deal. So the fact that Bosa is not on the field and McSorley's out there, and if he gets going a little bit and if he starts converting on those situations, I think it's one of those deals that you start thinking to yourself, boy, how are we ever going to do this? And it could become a frustrating proposition for a defense. Having said that, I do believe that Ohio State's offense, and really their roster in general, but their offense, more in particular with Dwayne Haskins, is about as good as any. They're explosive. They can score a lot of points. They can do it in any fashion that you want. They can do it throwing the ball down the field. They can do it running it with some very good running backs. And here's the main part. They've done their damage very similar, Clay, to Alabama in about half the quarters of football that they've actually played. And so their statistics, while they're impressive, you look at Penn State and they're like, yeah, number one scoring offense in the country. Yeah, they've done that in almost every quarter. You know, I mean, the very few times have they just had all their guys out of the deal. They've just been blowing people out. You could say, well, what are you talking about? They're right up there in terms of scoring margin with anybody else. Yes, but remember, they had to do that late. They ran away late in the fourth quarter. They were in kind of a dogfight with Illinois, which is an interesting proposition. They had that close game against App State, which is obviously concerning. So from that standpoint, I feel like Ohio State's the more dominant team. They're the better roster, and I expect them to win. But that issue with Bosa not being on the field, I think, could hurt them a lot.
When you look at this landscape so far, I mean, I think there are now three teams that have really distinguished themselves so far: Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. Would you agree with those three? Clemson, obviously, it's hard to judge them. They weren't that great against Texas A&M. They now have lost Kelly Bryant. How would you assess the top of the college football landscape right now?
I think that that's exactly right, what you just said. And I would say that Oklahoma would be the other team that you would throw in there and say, boy, I feel like they're really good, but they've concerned me with their defense at times this season. In particular in the last two, with the way that they did not tackle well against Iowa State, and then obviously having to face, 87 snaps against Army. It's concerning with what we saw last year when Georgia ran for what felt like a million yards in the Rose Bowl. So I think it's a five-team deal at the top, but you're right. The three teams that have been most dominant and most impressive for the entirety of the season is Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia. And I would argue that right now, I think Ohio State is actually the only other team that I could say, hey, with the way they've played, with the way that they can put up points, with the defense that they have on the field, they're the team that I actually believe, Clay, has the best chance of upsetting Alabama if there's anybody out there. I don't think Georgia can do it. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it completely, but there's something about the way that Georgia has played, and maybe even more particular last week against Missouri, that has concerned me a little bit. You might think I'm totally crazy, but to me, I feel like Alabama and Ohio State are the ones that have really separated themselves out.
No, look, I think there were alarming aspects of the Georgia performance against Missouri. In particular, they blocked a punt. They got a pick six. I mean, if Missouri doesn't turn the ball over and have a couple of goofs in that vein, that game could have really been close down the stretch. Not to say it wasn't really close, but it was an 11-point game. Mizzou had the ball. They were thinking, hey, if we score here, we can really make it interesting. It was kind of a double-digit game. All right, let's go to Clemson here for a minute with the Kelly Bryant decision. You played quarterback. You walked on after playing minor league baseball. You were really successful at Colorado. If you had been a senior, and I know you're a little bit different because you're older, but if you had been a senior, you'd been 16-2 as a starter, and then you found out that a younger guy was going to get the start the rest of the way, what is your response individually, and then break down what you think of Kelly Bryant's response?
Well, I am not probably the right guy to ask. I don't know if I was ultra competitive or I'm just too honest about this, but I didn't like my backup. And I don't think any starting quarterback should. And this whole notion of like, oh, I'm going to support him, blah, blah, blah. Like, I want to be the one out there. So I would have been so pissed. They sat me down for a game and basically started the other kid against Iowa State. And I was a junior, Clay, and I was hot. I mean, hot. I can remember being, as mad as I've ever been at anything. And then, of course, in the first half, our team was playing terrible. because the other kid never did well in live situations, and they were basing it all off of the practices. And in the live situation, all of a sudden we were down against Iowa State, and Gary Barnett looked at me basically with his tail between his legs and late the second quarter and was like, hey, go back in. I was like, you're damn right. Now,
is that what you said on the sideline?
I mean, you know me, and you know I did, and I kind of regret it, and I kind of don't all at the same time. Now, having said that, this situation is really interesting. And the reason is because the rules are just different now. And this is I don't fault Kelly Bryant, and I feel like Dabo did him a huge solid. Even in the vein of him saying, hey, I'm going to go with this other kid, I'm sure Kelly Bryant is pissed off, and rightly so. And yet at the same token, I give Dabo a ton of credit for doing this because I think he did it for Kelly Bryant and the timing of it so that Kelly could do what's best for him. And I don't fault him at all for leaving the program and saying, okay, I'm going to go ahead and transfer. Because if he doesn't, Clay, his football life ends this January as a backup at Clemson. That's just the facts of the matter. The only way for him to extend his football life is to leave. And you can't say, well, he could stay on the team and just sit the bench and support everybody. That's garbage. Because then, guess what happens? The first time Trevor Lawrence turns an ankle or anything happens, Trevor Lawrence throws three picks, guess what? Dabo Sweeney's going to have his tail between his legs and look over and say, hey, will you go in? And he's going to do it just based off of competitive nature. So the only way to save his football life is to leave now. That's just the facts of the matter, and I don't fault anybody in the situation. And I really, Clay, I can't stand people that are all over Kelly Bryant about it. It's not selfish. I mean, this is literally, this is just like when it comes to his football life, he's just trying to stay alive.
We're talking to Joel Klatt at Joel Klatt on Twitter. Go follow him. You can watch him tomorrow as he's calling the Michigan against Northwestern game. Hypothetical for you that
what
got asked by my buddy.
What was your thoughts? I know you probably want to move on, but
No. I was 100% on your side. And actually, I got asked a good question by a guy I know you go on their show down in Birmingham, Lance Taylor, who was on with us in hour one. He said, what happens if Trevor Lawrence goes out and gets hurt against Syracuse and is out for the rest of the season? Does Dabo get back on the phone and does Kelly Bryant come back to Clemson? I mean, it's actually an amazing question, right? Because he's gone now.
I'm sure he would. Now, if he removes himself from school, which he wouldn't, and this is very important, because he has to graduate in order for this transfer to happen. See? So this is what's so interesting. As we're thinking through this, you would think like, well, no, because he would leave school and then his eligibility would be hurt. Well, no. He's got to stay in school and graduate just so that he can transfer without penalty. So think about it from that standpoint. He's going to be on campus this semester. Oh, man, that is such an interesting question.
Isn't that a crazy thought? Like, look, nobody wants Trevor Lawrence to get hurt, obviously, but it happens in college football that starting quarterbacks get injured all the time. Don't you think the first thing Dabo would do when he got out of the locker room is call Kelly Bryant and be like, hey, Kelly, so about that leaving thing, my bad, we kind of need you, team needs you. Like, it would be one of the most remarkable things we've seen in college football, but I think it would totally happen. I think that's what Dabo would have to do. I don't think you can go to an unproven quarterback with a team that you think is otherwise good enough to contend for a national championship.
Totally agree. And Kelly might do it.
It would be a wild turn of events, but certainly I can't wait to see what's going to happen in that game between Clemson and Syracuse as Trevor Lawrence makes his debut. In the SEC, you have got LSU taking on Ole Miss. LSU is in the top five right now.
Before you even ask the question about LSU, can I just go on LSU for a second?
Yes, fire off.
I think that they are – do you remember Texas A&M a few years ago in the first playoff bowl, they were in the top four?
Yes.
This is the exact same situation. LSU is extremely overrated. They cannot play offense out of a wet paper bag, and as soon as they play a team that has any semblance of cohesiveness on offense, it's going to get nasty for them. I mean, do you really think that they're going to be able to beat some of these teams, you know, 10-9? Shoot, even Mississippi State. No, of course they're not going to. Even Texas A&M. Even especially Alabama. Alabama's going to beat LSU by 28 points because LSU can't score. So I feel like we are honoring the fact that they've beat some teams that we thought were good that, by the way, have each not played to their potential yet this season outside of Auburn beating Washington, who's had their own problems this year, in particular on the offensive side with Browning not playing very well. So we've pumped LSU way up based on preseason predictions, and I just don't think that they're as good as we think they are. Clay, I fully believe that LSU is going to have two, maybe even three losses in the SEC down the stretch.
That's the question I was going to ask you, because they're officially kind of diving into SEC play with Ole Miss coming to town. I haven't asked you this yet, I don't believe, about the Stanford-Notre Dame game, so I'll close out with that one. We got two top 10 games. I asked you already about Ohio State and Penn State. I'm going to be at that game. Can't wait to go check out the whiteout scenario in Penn State. What do you think is going to happen with Stanford going on the road at Notre Dame?
So if you had asked me before last week, I would have said Stanford's tougher game was at Oregon and that I thought that they could beat Notre Dame. When you look at the history since 2010, Notre Dame's only won against Stanford one time in the last eight. Stanford's pretty much had their way. They've been able to run the football, so on and so forth. But now all of a sudden, I think Brian Kelly made a really gutsy decision. He changed his quarterback, and I think it improved his team. And now all of a sudden, Ian Book comes out there, and they score over 50 points against Wake. And I know Wake's not necessarily a juggernaut, but let's be fair. I mean, that was a very good performance from Notre Dame. Meanwhile, Stanford is a yard away from being down 31-7. So all of a sudden, I'm a little concerned for Stanford. Stanford's 120th in the country in running the football, and that is their DNA. So at some point, you're going to have to say, listen, Stanford might be some smoke and mirrors, or you could try to convince yourself, which I've tried, that, hey, maybe they're just a really balanced team and they can win any style of football game. Listen, they can't put themselves in the hole like they did last week against Oregon. That's too much in particular for just the effort of what it needs. And they might have just emptied the tank last week. So we'll see. I've wanted to stay Stanford the entire year, but now as we get closer to the game, I'm starting to lean towards the Irish.
Joel Klatt, appreciate you coming on this show. Appreciate you coming on Lock It In earlier in the week and dropping the Saved by the Bell reference. That was phenomenal. Well done all around. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
Hey, by the way, I'm really happy for you about the book, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
By the way, I got this question. This is the poll question I put up. My publisher emailed me yesterday and said, you have sold way more copies than you need to be on the New York Times bestseller list. But he said, I just want to prepare you. They're not going to like the cover of your book, and they're not going to like everything that you wrote in the book to the extent that they're paying attention to it. Do you think the New York Times will put me on the list, or do you think they'll find a way to keep me off of it?
I'm sure they'll try to keep you off of it, knowing just what our society is, how the tech companies are operating, and everything like that. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, especially with the supercharged atmosphere that we have right now this week with the hearings in Washington.
By the way, can you imagine if somebody was quizzing you about your high school yearbook?
No, I cannot imagine. Oh, my gosh. I cannot imagine. The whole thing's a mess.
It was amazing, riveting television yesterday. You'll have amazing, riveting television with the Michigan-Northwestern game tomorrow. That's Joel Klatt. Go follow him on Twitter, at Joel Klatt.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The big news, obviously, for those of you waking up across the country last night, was we had a couple of kickoff games. Week 4 NFL action on Fox. Thought it went pretty awesome. Great game. The Rams dominate the Minnesota Vikings 38-31. And then on the other side, if you're a college football fan and you watch this game instead, much less entertaining. But the Miami Hurricanes were really pretty outstanding. And now Larry Fedora is officially on a really hot seat at UNC. The Miami Hurricanes dominate North Carolina Tar Heels in Thursday night college football action on ESPN last night. So I watched almost exclusively the NFL game. Jared Goff was phenomenal. I believe we have a bunch of audio from that for people out there who have maybe not been able to hear the highlights from last night. So let's do that. I think we played it in hour one. Let's do it for everybody waking up for hour three. And by the way, for everybody out there, Joel Klatt is going to join us in the next segment, final segment of the hour here. I will give you my 13 gambling picks as we head into the weekend for college football. And I'm not the kind of guy to brag or draw attention to himself, but my gambling picks have been winning in college football at a rate of 60%. So I feel like I know college football better than any other sport. So far, that's paying off well. I will give you those picks as we move forward. So what do we got for the highlights of the game so far, guys? Goff's fifth touchdown. Jared Goff had five touchdown passes, four of them in the first half, just dropping dimes. Phenomenal performance by Jared Goff. This is the fifth touchdown, happened last night. We've got the audio for you.
Goff now empty as he takes the shotgun snap. Looking over the middle, he throws down the left seam. Caught by the fingertips. Whoa. Robert Woods breaks into the end zone. And Jared Goff has thrown his fifth touchdown pass of the night.
Take that, Mike Zimmer.
He's intentional about getting better. Zach Taylor's done a great job with him, really just, you know, having him make sure that he has an ownership of the game plan, understands what we're trying to get done, and, you know, that constant dialogue, that communication that we talk about being on the same page. But at the end of the day, I think he's just throwing the ball extremely well. When things are in rhythm, he's been outstanding, giving guys a chance to run after the catch. You look at a couple of the plays where we ended up running some bootlegs, and he's going to his left, getting his shoulders around, hitting Cooks in stride, hitting Robert Woods. So there's a handful of plays that he made tonight that are just a great player, making great plays, but then also went things were there in rhythm. I thought he was outstanding.
That's Sean McVay breaking down a dominant performance by his team. The Rams now 4-0. I think it's hard to argue by anybody out there that through a quarter of the season, the Rams aren't the best team in football. Now, still a couple of other undefeated teams. The Dolphins are undefeated. They go on the road this weekend against the Patriots. If the Dolphins win that game, I think it's legitimate. You could sit back and say, man, how good are the Dolphins? I don't think that's a ridiculous question to ask. Certainly, Dolphin fans would have to be ecstatic, I think, in general, with being 3-1. But if they could go on the road and cap off a opening quarter of the NFL season by winning on the road in Foxborough for the first time in, I think, 9 years, that would be an incredible way to end it. And then Kansas City. Look, right now, if you were projecting the Super Bowl, I think it'd be crazy for anybody to have any team other than the Rams from the NFC and any team other than Kansas City from the AFC. Now, the Chiefs have to go on the road against the Broncos this weekend, so that's at least an interdivision challenge. We'll see what ends up transpiring there, whether there is any danger for the Kansas City Chiefs or whether Patrick Mahomes and his 13 touchdown passes are going to continue to roll against a still very talented Denver Bronco defense as well. So that's a fun game to pay attention to in the AFC West. I already think that the Rams basically have locked up the NFC West. I mean, you got a really ugly situation going on in Arizona in terms of the talent that we got right now. Maybe that's going to change with Josh Rosen. They're playing against the Seahawks, who have looked awful other than their win over the Cowboys. And the 49ers are not good, obviously, with the injury to Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think the Rams have basically locked up that division already. But a team that looks really troubling, honestly, because if the Detroit Lions can go on the road and win against the Cowboys, it would push the Vikings all the way down to last place in the NFC North. It's the Minnesota Vikings. Here is what Mike Zimmer had to say about his team's performance last night.
You know, we've never been, probably anywhere I've ever been, I've never been this poor in pass coverage. So we're going to have to look at everything we're doing and get back to doing things correctly.
Pass coverage indeed. But part of the problem with the pass coverage was not that they weren't there, it was that Jared Goff was throwing perfect passes. And as I was watching that game last night, I think we have drastically underrated Jared Goff as a passer. Now, I know Sean McVay is putting him into positions to be successful. If you're watching that game last night, they got a great matchup against the linebacker for Cooper Kupp on a touchdown. I think it was the second touchdown pass of the game from Jared Goff to Cooper Kupp for 70 yards. It was a great matchup and schemed design play by Sean McVay. But Jared Goff still had to make a good throw there. And there are a lot of NFL quarterbacks that cannot make great throws. The throw he made in for the second Cooper Kupp touchdown was phenomenal. It was double coverage. There was no room there to throw it. It wasn't that Kirk Cousins played poorly at all. It was just that Jared Goff was different level successful. And right now, if you're in the city of Los Angeles, we don't know what's going to happen in baseball. I'm going to bring in Danny G for the update on the baseball playoff race. But it's possible that you could have the Rams as the best team in the NFL. It's possible that you could have the Dodgers into the playoff for a second straight year. I know they lost Game 7 last year to the Astros, but the Dodgers could be in the playoff mix. We'll see. Certainly they're in the playoff mix, but they could maybe advance a little bit. And then you've got LeBron about to start. Could this be the greatest October in the history of LA sports? I think you could make an argument for that. Again, LeBron starting off in October. You've got the LA Kings are not bad, but let's be honest, it's hockey. It's on the flow chart relatively far down. You got the Rams, who may be the best team in the NFL, and you got the Dodgers, who could be in the middle of another postseason run. That would have to be close, Danny G, right, to the best October in the history of the city of Los Angeles?
Yeah, I think so. And for the past 6-7 years, I've been going to the same steakhouse in LA to watch sports at their bar. And every Sunday, there was one couple wearing Rams jerseys. That was it. When they came back to town, even with, of course, it was Jeff Fisher in those Rams, and that couple.
It might have been Jeff Fisher and his wife in the Rams jerseys at the bar, too, after he got fired.
Definitely family members of his when he was still coaching, and they were the only ones wearing Rams jerseys. I felt kind of bad for them. And then, of course, they turned it around from last place to first place last season. Now, I go into the steakhouse last night, nowhere to sit. The place was jumping. Rams crap everywhere, Clay. L.A. is obviously a bandwagon city when a team starts to win. Most cities are, right? I mean, winning fixes everything for your fan base or building a fan base. And I'm standing there thinking back to, man, a couple of years ago, I could have picked anywhere I wanted to sit here, and there was just that one couple sitting at the bar. Now, I had to wait 15 minutes just to be seated, and it was so loud and rowdy. And this is like a nice steakhouse. It usually doesn't sound like that on a Monday night in there. So this city definitely has embraced the L.A. Rams. And think about how that atmosphere was last night, the way it looked. That was a great showing on national TV. Imagine when they get to the brand new facility.
No, look, I mean, it was a hell of a Thursday night. Good debut for Fox on their Thursday night game. I thought it felt bigger to have Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on the call, Aaron Andrews, Christina Pink on the sideline. I thought it just seemed like a big event. And the games are better on Thursday night now. You had two teams that we expected to be Super Bowl contenders. We'll see whether the Vikings are going to be able to be one. I think it's certainly fair to say that the Rams are going to be in the mix all season long. And I love that story about L.A. starting to embrace the Rams. The thing I loved about last night, I loved the old school Rams uniforms. Yeah, old school yeah. Rams uniforms were great.
They had to wait for that NFL approval to get the helmets to match. Because remember last season and the season prior, we had to suffer with that ugly helmet that didn't match those old school unis?
Yeah, I mean, I just love the old school uniforms. I think that's a pretty cool concept. And I will say this, my 8-year-old, he just turned 8, is always wants to turn on Thursday night football. I know that like old guys like me, like what the uniforms look like, I'm usually not that focused on. The kid has asked me about Color Rush uniforms, I bet 100 times already this far into the NFL season. So it must work well, this idea of changing up uniforms for young kids. Obviously, it works for recruits in college football. That's what Oregon did. I'm not a uniform guy. I don't spend that much time thinking about the uniforms. My kids talk about the uniforms all the time. So somebody knows what they're talking about and what they're doing out there.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Play the music, boys. It's time to get rich.
Guess who's back?
It's time.
A.K.A. Mr. Make It Rain on them.
For Clay Travis to make us rich.
I'm rich!
Including the legendary, famous, well-known talk of the town most celebrated.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Blood. Bank. Guarantee.
We are at 60% on these picks that I have given out to you through 4 weeks. It's going to be even better after we go 13-0, starting tonight with Memphis minus 13.5 at Tulane. Tulane took a beatdown from Ohio State on the road. Short week. Memphis is going to roll, cover the 13.5 with ease on Friday. That's a Friday game, boys and girls. Pitt at Central Florida. I've got UCF minus 13.5 and the over 65. Dive in. Syracuse at Clemson. I love Cuse here. as a massive underdog, and I love the over in this game, Syracuse and the over. How about Ohio State, Penn State? I'm headed up. Going to be in with James Franklin and his family. He's coaching there. Awesome dude. I'm rooting for Penn State. I'm also betting on them. James Franklin, 25-1 against the number so far. Ohio State at Penn State. Penn State right now over a field goal underdog. Grab them. I think they win this game outright. South Carolina at Kentucky. I got Kentucky. They've won four in a row in this series. They're going to make it five in Lexington. I also love the under. Low-scoring, brutal game. Florida at Mississippi State. I love the Gators here. Dan Mullen going back to Starkville, and I like the under. That's Florida and the under. Stanford at Notre Dame. You just heard me talking about him with Joel Klatt. I actually like the Cardinal, and I like the under in this game. I think Stanford and Notre Dame, it stays close. Notre Dame may win, but I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think Stanford will cover at 5.5. And finally, Ole Miss at LSU. I like the over. Ole Miss has no defense. I think that LSU will score 40. I think that Ole Miss will score 24 or more. That's the over, boys and girls. We are going 13-0.